G'day, it's Will.
And this is Charlie, and our AFL adjacent podcast, Two Guys, One Cup, is back.
Yep, check it out now on the Listener app. In the meantime, here's a promo.
When it comes to footy podcasts, you can listen to the experts.
I feel their power is being undermined by the AFL system itself.
The analysts.
Tackles 25 to 16, 26 to 16. So now they win in the ball.
Then there's Two Guys, One Cup. An AFL podcast with Will Anderson and Charlie Clawson.
Oh, Dougie.
Max
right.
Gawn's nickname is Dougie.
He's Dougie.
Do you reckon you could extrapolate from Gawn to Dougie? Max, Dougie, Gawn, gone, leave, leaves, trees in the ground, dig, dug, Dougie.
Will and Charlie may not always get it right.
I feel there's a lot of pessimism from Melbourne fans at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think they're a top eight side.
Melbourne are the premiers for 2021!
But they're never short of big ideas.
I believe the Candyman has retired the title of the Candyman, which means there is a big Candyman-shaped hole on the Gold Coast that could be filled by Ben King.
Two Guys, One Cup, a weekly AFL podcast with Will Anderson and Charlie Clawson.
We are Two Guys, One Cup.
Hear new episodes now on the Listener app.
A Listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
The following episode of TOFOP is rated MA for mature audiences. It may contain sexual references, time travel references, allegations of bin misconduct, and mild coarse language. TOFOP advises that this episode is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who thinks a comedy conversation between two old mates sounds like a terrible idea for a show. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Everyone relax, this is TOFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson. Hello and thank you for watching.
Will, I'm not relaxed. In fact, I'm furious. Can we just stop things down to get into some talkback radio?
Beautiful. Love it.
Type shit? Because it's fresh on my mind. It's just happened. A bit of context. Gemma's away. She's away for quite a few weeks, so I'm solo dadding at the moment. It always feels weird to say, like, so I'm parenting. Like, it's because it's kind of a given.
But, it implies that you're not parenting when she's around.
Yeah,
exactly. You clock off. You're back. I'm not parenting anymore. I will resume parenting when you leave.
You know, people use the term daddy daycare, stay-at-home dad, whatever. That is me right now. But it's been off to a rough start because literally – I had the biggest day scheduled for Thursday. You know, we had multiple records. I had a bunch of meetings and stuff. And I remember saying, I couldn't shift a lot of this stuff around. And I remember saying to Jem, oh, God, that's the first day you're gone. Well, as long as nothing goes wrong on that Thursday, everything
the famous
will be fine.
Words, as long as nothing goes wrong. So what went wrong?
So I woke up to a message from Iona's daycare that a bug has just ripped through daycare and they're like all their staff are out. And if it is possible to keep your child home today, please do that.
I mean, I would have thought it would be absolutely fine if there's a bug at the local daycare considering the high rates of vaccination in the local area.
Yeah, not so good, mate. Not so good.
There's a bit of a bug going around. Have you heard of polio?
So I was very close to texting you and our producers and just saying, hey, look, you know, I'm going to have to scramble this day. But then Jem, because she's the master organizer from, I don't know how she managed to do this, whether she was in transit or on a plane with Wi-Fi, managed to organize a friend of ours whose daughter goes to school with Iona to say, hey, could you come and grab Iona for a few hours, which was a godsend. I got like 60% of my work done. And Iona had a great time with a friend. They, you know, had like a, they went to a like circus school and the library and the beach and all this great kind of stuff.
And based on your earlier definition, that meant that for those couple of hours, your friend was technically Iona's parent. She was doing the parenting.
Exactly. she was doing the parenting. So anyway, I get Anna home that night and she complains that she's got a bit of a headache. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, well, they're out in the sun and running around. Maybe it's a bit of sunstroke. So I give her a bit of Panadol. And then that night she comes in and she's really ill, like feverish and all kinds of stuff, and wakes up in the morning complaining about having a sore neck, which within a kid is not a great sign, because it could be meningitis if they complain about having like a stiff neck. When you and I do it, it's because we're old men. When a kid does it, it's a serious thing.
I mean, I think it was the words of the Wu-Tang Clan who said, you've got to protect your neck. That's the one thing you know about both a baby and a toddler. You've got to protect the neck.
Well, that's a problem. I'd listened to too much Busta Rhymes, who's all about breaking your neck.
Yeah.
So I got it completely back to front. So just to be safe, I had to take her to a hospital just to make sure, like get her tested and stuff. Turns out she's fine. She was just, there's a bug. She had the bug that was going around the daycare center. So a couple of days of her being unwell, and then I'm like, okay, well, that's good. We get to the weekend, as long as I don't get anything. And then I woke up this morning with a fucking headache. I'm like, oh my God.
How's your neck?
Why do you mock me, Lord? Meanwhile, I get a text from Jem saying, hey, like I had a couple of days in LA before I had to fly down to, you know, where she's going to work. And she said, and my friend, they've invited me to Cape Cod because her boyfriend has, he's an engineer and he's built a rocket there blasting to outer space. So I'm just going to go do that. I'm like, all right, awesome. So you go to watch a rocket
being blasted into outer space, and I will watch some vomit being blasted across the bathroom.
I will watch diarrhea be launched into the toilet bowl at a rapid pace. So I'm feeling okay. I've taken some Panadol. I've leveled out. And I was like, I only was feeling up and about. And I was like, well, this is a good sign. Like that means the kid's back.
Once quick
the kid
recovery.
Play again. Yep. Quick recovery. So we go to the park and she's playing around with play equipment. And I'm sort of sitting there just because I'm feeling a bit queasy. So I'm not getting involved. And I'm sitting to the side just trying to like, you know, keep fluids inside my body. And then I see this like little boy about 2 years older than Iona, like talking to Iona. And Iona's like, I'm not a baby. I'm not a baby. So I wander over. And I say, what's going on? And she's like, he's calling me a baby. And this little, I'd say he's 5 years old. He's like, well, you are a baby. And I said, well, I said, she's not a baby. She's a toddler. But I can understand, you know, from your perspective, because you're a bit older, that she looks like a baby. And then this little boy's brother gets on, who's probably a year younger than him, but still older than Iona. And he's like, she is a baby. And so I'm like, okay, let's turn this into a game. I'm like, well, you know what? To me, you're all babies because I'm older than you. So you're all babies, you know, trying to kind of bit of. I thought that was going to settle things down, Will. It didn't.
Didn't.
These kids took great offense.
Yeah, no.
To me turning the tables
on. I've got to be honest with you, Charlie. That feels like something I might say to a kid because I don't have to deal with the fallout of the situation. It sounds exactly like the sort of thing that I would lobby in, but I would have thought you, with some parenting experience, must have known that there was a little fire burning there and the best way to put it out wasn't add petrol to it.
Well, here's the thing though, like, especially when you're dealing with little boys who tend to be like, you know, a bit more kind of bolshy. Like if you kind of, you don't want to back down, you kind of want to like throw a little, you know, petrol on the fire. Cause they're like, oh, I respect it. I like the cut of your moxie. You know, you're going to call me baby. And then it becomes a game. It's like, oh, like, you know, we're all babies. And then I thought maybe we could start like calling everyone babies. And it's the, it's the Lenny Bruce.
Yeah. Okay, that's right. If we just keep using the B word, then the B word has no power and you've just got to demystify the B word.
Exactly. I was trying to demystify the B word.
Like, you know what it is, guys? It's the Chris Rock approach. It's you just say, I like young people, but I hate babies.
So it seemed to work for a while because all the kids were laughing about being babies and stuff. But then these boys just got back on their you're a baby kind of thing. And I
this is a classic generation wars though. This is the equivalent of, you know, people like mocking the boomers millennial. Or, you know, all these sort of things. Like it's just they're closer together in age, but percentage-wise in their life, a five-year-old's at a very different place to a three-year-old. And it does feel like a generational shift, I imagine, from like what you're getting about being able to do at three versus what you can do by yourself at five. It probably feels like an entire generation has passed by.
Yeah, so I could see going downhill. So I tried to sort of shift the narrative again because this play equipment, it's kind of shaped like a pirate, like a ship. And so I said, well, you know, you're not babies. You're all a bunch of pirates and you're on this ship. And what are you going to do? Is that a blue whale out there? And I'm trying to kind of distract them. But the offense was caused and these boys were now like intent on like making us pay. And so I'm sitting at the bottom of the slide with her own in my lap, and these two boys are standing at the top of the play equipment. And there's a little kind of loudspeaker thing on the play equipment. You can go up and you can just – and so they start hurling insults out. First, right. They called me a duck's bum bum.
Hang on. So do they just – do they, like, direct it at specifically at you? Like, how do they – 100%. Do they say, that old man is a duck's bum bum, or, like, how do you know?
I'm only about 2 feet away, and they're facing me.
Oh, and so it's like you're a duck's bum bum.
You're a duck's bum bum. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then I can't remember the other insults, but they're all around about, oh, I could be an idiot at one point. Yeah. He said, well, you're a dumb idiot.
Did you say that's ableist? I said that's really inappropriate in the year 2023 to use an outdated terminology. Like, I'm fine with duck's bum bum. Absolutely fine with that. But idiot, no thank you. Your generation's meant to be better than this.
Well, I thought I'd take the high road. And so they're hurling out these insults. And I started saying to INSC, this is not great behavior. Yeah. This is bad manners. Like, this is, we don't yell things out at people, because I thought it could be a good teaching moment. Mm. But that just fired them up, because they were getting a reaction, because clearly I was like trying to change the narrative again. And so they're yelling and yelling and yelling. And I'm like, this is fine. We'll just extract ourselves from the situation. And then I get up to take Anna away, and one of the kids takes a mouthful of water and spits it on us.
Oh, hang on.
And I'm like, holy fucking shit, what? And I see these two mums chatting just to the side, and I'm like, oi. I'm like, are these your kids? And this mum turns around and is like, yeah, that's my boys. And I said, well, one of them just spat water on us. And she's like, oh, okay. And she's gone, whatever his name was, give me the bottle.
Jaden.
And I'm standing there, I'm waiting for like an apology, or this kid to get yelled at, nothing. She just goes back to talking to her friend. And Iona's kind of upset because she's got like water on her little dress. And I'm just like, fucking hell. And I'm feeling sick. And so I'm like, I'm going to fight. And then I'm like, don't do it, man. Like,
punch the kid. You should have punched the kid.
Mate, I didn't want to punch the kid. Kids are kids. I wanted to go up to this mum and say,
spit water in her face.
What the fuck are you doing?
You've got to go up with some water and you've got to spit it in her. You've got to say
Triple H style.
You've got to say, firstly, you ma'am, you are a duck's bum bum. You should say that. And then you take a giant swig out of your water bottle that you carry with you everywhere and you spit it in her face. And then you say, by the way, I've got the bug that's going around.
I should have thought of that. I didn't know. Like, I actually was like, well, I have to be a good example. So I took Iona away and I said, this is what happens when you get into a situation like this and you don't like it. I say, you either tell an adult or you extract yourself. And she's going, yeah, but you told that adult nothing happened. I'm like, that's why we're extracting ourselves. But, like, did I do the right thing? Should I have gone up to the mum and said, hey, excuse me, I'm not sure you realize what your son just did, or am I being too sensitive?
Well, firstly, here's what I would say. When I wade into the arena of how parents deal with other parents about their children, it is very easy for me to make grand pronouncements on the topic because I have no stakes in the game. So I would even say that
parent to parent.
This ain't
like,
dad pod,
I do not know this.
You know, I can't bring you some OSHA researched advice on what the best way to walk our way through this conversation is. You know, deal and diffuse with anger. I don't have any research. We can't now go to an expert. I don't know how. Even if I had an expert, I can't on my old Zoom get a phone call through to the podcast. That's OSHA's territory. I'm your idiot friend who's just going to say, normally, Charlie, the most fun I ever have on this podcast is like trying to point out where you did the wrong thing. But I feel like you've handled this pretty well. I got to be honest with you. I can't.
It wasn't satisfying though.
No.
Like, I walked away fuming.
That's why you know you handled it the right way. Because if it was satisfying, if you walked away feeling like you had some sort of victory, then you would have stepped over some line to get to that point that in the moment you would have felt good about. But I guarantee you would have kept thinking about and thinking about. And after a while, you were like, you know what? I should not have spat my water into that woman's face.
Well, here's the weird thing, isn't it? Because like I was rationalizing because I was feeling so angry and I was rationalizing it as I was walking over to the car and I'm like, look, I don't know what this kid's situation is. I don't know what his neurodiversity status is. You know, I don't know what the family situation is.
That's right. Like,
I don't know if she's under a lot of pressure at home and this is just one more thing she can't fucking deal with. But part of me really wanted to parent shame. Like, I really wanted to say, come on. All it took was a correcting of the behavior on the spot. But it didn't, like...
I mean, that, spitting and is that, the way... So for me, like the name calling and all those sort of things...
That's fine.
That
whatever.
All makes sense to me. But spitting is such is a horrendous insult as an adult in society that I just don't think that you want to normalize something like that early on. I mean, all that shit talk that they immediately went to will serve them well in the era of the internet. Like, they're going to be prepared for the world, you know? Like, you should do when you are confronted by anyone you disagree with is find a loudspeaker and immediately start hurling insults. Like, I mean, they are ready for the internet.
That's, you're right. But that's like Twitter crash.
Yeah. But spitting at people, like, that is, like, you see it on, you know, in public, like in protests, people spitting at police. You see it at sporting events. It's still seen as something that is genuinely crossing a line. You know, we've decided that that is that's like really dodgy and you shouldn't do that. So the idea that they spat on a stranger, like, I would be not rapt if I don't care if some kid calls me a bunch of insults, but if some kid spat on me, particularly knowing the grot factories that children are, I'd be like, no, hang on, you as a parent should be stopping your, like, you know what I mean, like, if my dog went up and weed on someone's leg, I would, like, you know, I would be...
I'd run the other... In fact, that did happen when Junior was around. He sprinted across an oval to wee on a woman on a walking frame, and I have never walked in the other direction so fast in my life.
I mean,
pretend that I didn't see
that
it.
That case, you knew you were going to get away.
I was the mum.
Right. Yeah, but...
Maybe it's karmic justice. It's taken like 20 years
that,
for
that
karma
old woman
to
probably put
visit.
A curse on you that day and said one day you're going to get revenge. Or I like the idea that the old woman in that situation, you decide to run away because she's in a walking frame and she just like grabs the walking frame, starts running towards you and bashes you with the walking frame.
Well, yeah. So it was just one of those things where... You know that you have done the right thing, but you can't help but feel like, did I stand up for myself enough? Did I create change in this moment? You know, what could I have done this better?
Okay, but then, let's role play through the scenario again, and I'll just give you my gut instincts on how I would have handled each situation. And I'm not going to think about it.
So am I me and you're the mum?
No. Let's go back. Let's go back to the kid situation. So I'm you in this scenario. You're Iona for the start, but you're going to have to play all the characters. You're going to have to play Iona, and then you're going to play the boy. So I'm playing you. I'm the person who has to deal with the circumstances as they've arisen. So you start by telling me what's happened. What's happened?
Okay. Daddy, that boy called me a baby.
Oh.
She is a baby. You are a baby.
Well, excuse me, boy. She's not a baby. She's a toddler. In fact,
you're a bum bum head.
Well, you're a little cunt, aren't you? So,
mum, Adam Hills called me a cunt.
It's probably not even your real mum. I don't know. Is that your mum? Where's dad? Is he around? What's going on?
Clearly not. Okay. I mean, like, I know you're joking, but that's fucking good. Like, I really wish I'd gone to that.
Just really get in the head of the kid.
I mean, it's weird too, because it's kind of like, I mean, you probably must experience this all the time. Like, you know, you're a stand-up comedian who's used to dealing with hecklers. So it's kind of like that thing of you're a trained killer. And when someone is giving you shit and you know there's like 10 ways to dismantle them, but you can't do it because, you know, you're a trained killer. Like, that's what it is with children. Like, they're saying all this kind of shit to you and it's like, mate, like, I could tell you that your father left for a reason, but what does that do in the long run?
So that is the best, like, example to get me inside the head that anyone's ever given me, because that is how I live all the time. Like, I constantly live in this world of whenever anybody, an amateur in public, like, is trying to start something, like, I secretly know that I could go in and just really destroy their day, like, really break them down to the bone in a really entertaining way for everybody else, and I choose not to. And that is what being a parent must be like constantly when you're dealing with kids.
Yeah. 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 When other people's kids.
That's what I mean.
Kids,
like, when you're around – like, I mean, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, when you're around other kids, you're like, I could destroy you easily.
Yeah.
Hey, just like, I mean, it'd be so easy to just go around going, because I've got no stakes in the game, right? Like, absolutely no stakes in this game. Like, some little 5-year old says to me, like, oh, you know, she's a baby. And you're like, what are you? You're a baby as well. I'm not a baby. I was like, do you believe in Santa Claus? Yeah. Well, Santa Claus isn't real. Neither is the Easter Bunny or the Tooth Fairy. Good luck with the rest of your day. And by the way, if you're a parent who's upset that I said those things on this podcast, like 2 minutes after I said the C word, then that's your fault.
Get your priorities straight.
You have this out loud. Yeah.
But the flip side of that is, yeah, you're right. You have all this ammo and you can't use on these kids. But the flip side of that is your own kids have all this emotional ammo on you and they only have to say one thing and it fucking destroys you. So it's like, it really is like, what do they call it? Like, you just, everyone's just stockpiles their weapons. It's just, so no one shoots that first nuke.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Everyone's pointing a gun at everybody else. And as long as nobody puts the gun down, we're all fine.
Speaking of people who can take people down, did you see the Chris Rock, the Netflix special? Have you watched it yet?
So have you watched the whole thing?
Yes.
Okay. So I read about all the Will Smith stuff in the paper and then I watched the first half of it the other night, and that's mostly – he references it a couple of times, but the majority of the Will Smith people –
He says it for the last 15 minutes or something.
Yeah, it's at the end. And I've got to be honest, like, I'm historically a massive fan of Chris Rock's, but I got about 35 minutes in and I was like, I know where the rest of this is going and it's already been a bit too much for me. Like, even at this point, there's like a anger or a bitterness or a something to the whole performance, even the stuff that isn't the Will Smith stuff. Because, like, I'd read the quotes from that. I knew that that was going to get full on. And I'm like, shit, I'm not sure that – like, where I'm already at with this special 35 minutes in, I'm not sure. I will go back and watch the rest of it, but it was going to be too much to watch it all in a row for me. What were your thoughts?
Well, there is no comedian in the world who has more goodwill going into that special. Like, everyone was like on Team Rock. And he is one of the greatest stand-up comedians of all time.
No doubt.
And I purposely didn't read the pool quotes because I'm like, I want to get the whole flavor of what he's building to and stuff. And I mean, on a technical point of view, like, he was really nervous and
well,
he flubbed a lot of lines.
So for people who don't know, this was like a big Netflix special. So instead of like the special being normally what happens with like these big comedians and their specials, they will film more than one night. Yeah, you know, Chris Rock, you know, in different ones has filmed shows all over the world, put them together, but you're not just seeing. In Australia, it's a bit different to that. Like, I mean, for my Willogical special on the ABC, we just did one show. And so the show you see on TV is like the edited version of that show, but it's still edited. On the night, I did 70 minutes and the special 60 minutes. Whereas for Chris Rock, he was doing it going out live. It has now been edited a little bit for the version you'll see, but you could tell he was nervous about the fact that it was going out live.
Yeah.
I feel like, and again, like we're criticizing. You know, or I'm being critical of one of the greatest comedians in the history of comedy. Like, you know, a person who at various stages I have thought was the best comedian in the world. But there was a lot of the special for me that felt like he was almost doing a parody of Chris Rock.
I was just going to say that. The best like simile I can think of is like, you know, we both loved Kevin Smith. And then Kevin Smith has just gone so into his own like meta, you know, he just makes films about himself now it seems. And like, I just don't really get any enjoyment watching it. And it feels like this is like Kevin Smith doing a version of Kevin Smith or his like View Askew universe. And Chris Rock is a View Askew kind of alum. But that's what I felt like. It's like, oh, this feels like one of his like, you know, bigger, badder, blacker, but just, it just felt artificial. And I wasn't buying a lot of it, you know. And
well, there's some really at least there's a thing that really annoys me as a comedian. And so Tom Ballard, and that's the thing. I hate Tom Ballard. No,
the end.
Anyway, back to Chris Rock.
I'm Charlie Clausen.
Yeah. No, Tom Ballard said this to me a long time ago, like, you know, a decade ago. But it's one of those things that has stayed with me since. Which is, he said that there is a lot of comedians who the premise will be that they're supportive of the cause that, you know, like, you know, so the example he used back then was like, he was a gay person. He said, there's a lot of people who do material that the setup is that they're in favor of like gay people, you know, that gay people should be able to get married, that gay people should be able to like be in the army or whatever. But then the joke, the act out relies on a really stereotypical version of what like a gay person would be like in the army or a gay person would be like in whatever that situation is. And he said, so you're not really, you say that you're on the side of the person, but then all the jokes are actually technically the same sort of jokes that you could hear in a special by someone who wasn't on the side of the person.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of moments in this where he, the premise, the setup,
bitches be shopping. Yeah. Bitches be shopping.
And then it just goes into some stuff where you're like, oh, this is not you know, great material. And that, and that thing he does where he repeats the premise, like, you know, that's brilliant when it's
selective
like
outrage.
You know, but the not just that, but like in the start of every joke, he has that thing where he goes, like, you know, whatever the premise of the bit is, like, you know, we don't need to ban guns. We need to make bullets worth $1 million. We don't need to ban guns. We don't like that. That's how he, you know, he repeats it like a preacher. When he's at his best, that's brilliant, that moment, because it's a genuine moment of insight and it brings you, so you get the insight first, then he repeats it so that you're like, okay, now I'm in that world. I understand that world. So by the time he then goes into the bit, you're like, okay, great. Like I hunt. But when he does that same thing for every joke, like sometimes the thing that he's saying isn't profound. It doesn't need to be repeated twice. You're like, we got this the first time. Like you don't need to be like, And sometimes it you're going, you're trying too hard to establish a universe in which it doesn't really make sense. Like if you just say, cheese, I'm not going to do the voice, but cheese goes between your knees. Between your knees is where cheese goes. Cheese goes between your knees, and you're like, yeah, I know you've said it three times in a way that's meant to make that sentence sound profound, but all I'm doing is thinking about cheese now.
Yeah. I also felt too like the overarching theme of selective outrage, he bookends it, but there is no through line. Like I didn't find it consistent with the whole thing. And it kind of reminds me of when I went and saw, who's the dude from Red Dwarf? Craig Charles, I think it is. And I was a big Red Dwarf fan. My girlfriend at the time had got me tickets and it was awful. It was like one of the worst stand-up gigs ever. And he bookended it with like, you know, Red Dwarf's a lot like this. And then he just told a bunch of the most sort of hackneyed, you know, jokes on the way and then ends with a, and Red Dwarf is like this. And it's like, but that's, there's no, I thought it was a Red Dwarf stand-up thing. He basically just said, you know, in Red Dwarf, we're in outer space. And that's why Red Dwarf's is set in outer space. But it's like, that doesn't actually connect the tissue. Like you can't just say it at the start and the end and go, therefore, that is the connecting theme. Like, and the actual Will Smith stuff, it was weird because I don't know if reading it affected the same way as hearing it perform, but there wasn't a lot of jokes, really. It was more of a, I would have much rather have seen him say all that stuff in an interview situation because I thought it was interesting and I didn't know any of that stuff about Jada and, you know, her son's friend and all that kind of stuff. But he was, it was weird. It wasn't, but even that, I just thought there was
like,
more.
I find that the sort of thing that I'm like, why are you, you like you said, he already had all the goodwill. You don't need to go there, you know? Like I would have loved if he attacked the bit of like, he attacked it a bit more like, I get it. You have other things going on in your life and you took the anger out on me. I'm not going to go into what those things are. That's not for me to be parading your dirty laundry. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, that thing happened and it was on, like, I think his justification for talking about it would have been that they talked about it, you know, on their TV show. So it's not a hidden secret.
Which is pretty much exactly what he said.
Public knowledge. Like, but he doesn't need to. It's already out there. He could have implied it or like referenced it without like fully spelling it out, you know, any of these sort of things. You like going there made it feel a bit more like revengey rather than funny.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like if you wanted to get into it, you know, and have a, like, I would listen to a podcast, you know, if he did Marin or something like that, where he talked about it and brought up all that stuff because, you know, whatever, like, and I think, you know, he's allowed to do it. He got slapped in the face on national television, whether or not, you know, you agree that it's tasteful or not. But in this context of a stand-up performance, there wasn't enough set up and joke. Like, it was just literally a mean-spirited description of what's going on in the Will Smith's life, whatever. Yeah. But well, that's fine. You can lay out all that ugly, dirty laundry, but where's the payoff? And then I'm not sure if you saw this bit or if it was in the in the article you read, but his big kind of build to a joke, he fucked it up. Like he got the names, like he, and he even says, oh shit, I fucked up the joke, but still went ahead and did it. And so it was just this real, like just a flatline moment, right? Well, this is the climax of your show. And it was because he basically, the joke was, you know, and spoilers in case you're playing watching, it's not that great a joke, but Will Smith is in one film called Concussion and is in another film called Emancipation.
Oh yeah.
And he, what he wanted to say was like, you know, he made me hate him so much. I just wanted to see him get his ass kicked in Emancipation, but he said Concussion. And he said, I fucked it up. And then he went and retold it and put an Emancipation in, but it was just like, oh no, like I feel really bad. And then the worst bit was, so he finishes the special and he does a mic drop. And I'm like, that was not a mic drop performance. Like I know maybe when you did your trial show or your preview, it went fucking super well and the audience was standing and, but don't just pre-plan to drop the mic. I don't think you can pre-plan a mic
drop.
Well,
I think the mic drop probably is the achievement itself, right? Like I don't think that you can devalue the achievement, which is, you know, having the kind of courage to do a special in a way that other people aren't doing a special at the moment, for it to go out live, to literally do the thing. Like, I mean, the mistake proves why people don't do that, right? Because there's a possibility if you're going out live in that moment that you fuck up your biggest joke of the night. But also the problem is, you know, and again, I haven't seen this bit yet. So, but if you're in a live setting and that happens, you have that sort of freedom of like leaning into it, having some fun with the audience, really bringing them back on side for the fact that you fucked it up. Like, you know, like even doing that sort of thing, I don't know what if he does there, but I can imagine if I did that and I was going out live, you'd lean into the idea of, you know, like the good news is this is not going out live. We'll fix this in the edit. Here comes the real version. Of, like, you know, like have some fun with the fact yeah. that what you're doing and the
he
fact
does
that
not
you're fucked up.
Do that.
And then by the time you then did the joke again, like if you said, you know, so what you've got to look, the truth of it is, like, he got his head bashed a lot in Concussion as well. So I'm happy to see that. But I've got a better punchline.
Yeah.
Or you might even do that thing of going, yeah. oh, man, no, I've thought of a better thing. Like, and go back and, like, try to get, like, whatever it is. But
yeah.
that fear, like, I'm sure if he's in a room and he flubs that joke, he probably does more with it to get the audience back and deal with it than he would do in that moment. Like when he's going out live all over the world on Netflix, like it is a big achievement.
Yeah.
And so the very fact that he did it and the way that it had been mythologized, I mean, there was a pre-show and a post-show talking about the fact that he was doing,
oh, really?
Yeah. Like Ronnie Chang hosted the pre-show and there was like a post-show with comedians and people talking about it as well. This was, you know, really a huge
big
event.
Deal.
Even the fact that at the start of the special, he walks through that corridor of his past greatest bits, you know, where like his past greatest bits are playing as he walks towards
Jesus Christ,
the stage.
I didn't realize
it was.
I didn't even know it was happening until like a week before, but I didn't. Oh God, there's heaps of pressure on him. I mean, look, I don't want to. I'm like you. I love Chris Rock and love his old specials and stuff. It was just disappointing.
He's caught in two worlds, right? One of them is that you don't want to be trying this stuff too much because there's so much media interest in it. The quotes are going to run everywhere well before you get to film the special and it fucks up everything. So I got the impression because so much of that material hadn't leaked that maybe he hadn't done it as much as, you know, he would have traditionally done material before. And there just still is that difference. Like, I mean, I've been, you know, back on the road, you know, doing some shows and that difference between the first week and the second week when you're getting your head around something is mostly when it goes off the page into the performance. And so if he wasn't as familiar with that material because he was trying to keep it a bit more secret and a bit, you know, maybe there is that as well that meant.
Well, do you think also like he knew that no matter what he said, that was going to be the bit that got the audience going? Like, I mean, it's kind of, you know, like we said, he's got the audience on his side. So you could sort of go, well, as long as I'm truthful and just say what's in my head, then it's going to get a good reaction. But I don't think that was enough. I think maybe if the rest of the show had been flawless and, you know, had been a great through line and stuff and it was a stronger connection to the end, then yeah, sure, you could just do be joke-free at the end and just say what happened. But I think it'd been so uneven because I remember I was actually feeling bad for him. I mean, feeling bad for a multimillionaire like entertainer, But I was just I felt bad for him because I was like, oh, this was a fucking golden opportunity. We talked about it after the slap happened. Oh my God, like Chris Rock's got a year to think about this and what's the material going to be? And then I saw it and I was like, oh, this is kind of disappointing. It was like when you went and saw The Phantom Menace, like you'd been all this time to go, oh, wow, new Star Wars film. And you're like, I don't think that was very good.
I was excited to give advice to Chris Rock? But I think if you're going to dedicate that much of your special to something, because it was so big and everybody wanted to hear about it, I would have gone the opposite and just made the whole special about that. Like, and I'm not saying that you right. need to, but, you know, the first time I got punched in the face was when I was 6 years old. You know what I mean? Like, tell that story. The most famous time I got punched in the face
was by a grown man at a playground because I spat water on his daughter.
You get my daughter's name out of your mouth. You screamed at that child.
Yeah, that's right.
But so pick that apart. Do some material about what it's like to host the Oscars. Do some material about what your relationship with, you know, rap and Will Smith is. Do some material about what it's like to be. Now, I've only seen the stuff that really directly refers to the incident. But for me, it'd be like, here was the media coverage. Here was what the fallout was. Here's what it was like on the night. Here's what it was like the next week. Here's what the apology was like. Here's what, like, if you're going to do it, rather than like going, you know, hey, Will Smith's marriage is, I mean, and again, because the implication seemed to be to me that he's angry because of this situation, whereas you don't know the reality of their situation. They might be in a very, like, I mean, I know that they have talked about working through it, but they might be well worked through it. He might have his own arrangements. Like, who fucking knows what's going on? And it's none of your business, really. Like, it doesn't, you're assuming that it explains that, but it doesn't necessarily. I even find that connection to be a little tenuous. That says more about what Chris Rock thinks of the world than what might the reality might be. But if he'd worked his way through all of that stuff, like, and done, you know, bits and pieces that were related and not related, and just went, fuck it, I'm doing the whole special about it, like, then you're like, okay, well, then you have time for nuance as well. You have time for what was my role in this? Does he ever discuss, like, the joke itself?
No.
And like, so that would be like, for me, if I'm doing this show, like, I'm doing at least 3 or 4 minutes on, did I tell the right joke on the night? What was I going for? What were the other options for jokes? You know, like, I've had times in my life before when jokes went wrong. This is not even the worst time, like, a joke went wrong for me. I was in Philly one night and dot, dot, dot. Like, I mean, this is your show, right, to me? Like, this is, you know, just flesh out the thing. You've got this thing that everyone's going to be super curious about anyway. Why not lean in and make the – I mean, that's a more European and – Australian approach to how you would do a show more than American one, right? American one is like, I can't spend the entire show talking about one thing. But I think that that would have been a much more satisfying hour, regardless of how funny it was,
100%.
If you just fleshed out that entire thing.
Well, what I thought we were going to get from him is like more of a deconstruction on, like, you know, Will Smith is this alpha male jockey type dude, big, muscular, you know. Chris Rock is this weedy little comedian, yet Will Smith felt the need to go up and physically dominate him. Like, that as a topic, we could do an hour on that.
Right.
Like, you know, deconstruct violence, masculinity, all this kind of stuff from Chris Rock's perspective, because he's got this brilliant, insightful mind. And, you know, that's what I always thought we were going to get more of, is like,
I mean, did,
you know,
he talk this, about, this kind- did he talk about like the idea of like what it was like to be in the room, you know, with Will Smith then winning the award? Is that part of the material?
Not really, no.
Because that to me is comedically interesting as well, right? Like, this thing happens.
Yeah,
then, like...
like it assaulted.
And then 15 minutes later, he has essentially the highlight of his entire life. They hand him the thing that he's wanted all of his life. Like, to me, that is so comedic and so interesting that, like, I mean, Hamilton's got a pretty good bit about that moment. He's got a better bit than obviously Chris Rock has about that moment.
I mean, there may have been lines here and there, but it certainly wasn't like, it wasn't fleshed out as much.
Examine it.
As I thought.
Tell us what
it was
like. I mean, the curiosity of going, what was my first thought? What did happen when I went off stage? Like, you know, have I, like, what are the reactions? What have people, told me to say versus what I wanted to say. Like, I mean, that conundrum that you had at the start of this podcast, imagine him exploring that. Like, in the moment, yeah. Here's what I wanted to say. Here's what my friends told me to say.
Yeah.
That even would be how I would do the nastiest lines. Like, you know, it'd be that sort of thing of going, like, you go through that period of time where, like, this is what I'm going to go after. I'm going to go after the fact that you, if you want to do the relationship stuff, then do it, you know, there. But do it in the context of this was me at my angriest and my worst. And then there's another part of me that's like, you know, tries to understand and walk a mile in his shoes and be forgiving of the blah, 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 and like really flesh it out.
Yeah. He doesn't really, like, he does a lot of talking about how much he loves, you know, Will Smith. He's supported him his whole career. He's gone to see him in concert and all this kind of stuff. And then the only reference to what was going through your mind is he said, and my friends were like, why don't you do anything, Chris? And he's like, because Will Smith's like 6'4" and I'm like a weed. But he doesn't get into any further psychology of it or you know, what it means as a whole or anything like that. Will, I would love to keep talking about Chris Rock, but I was unexpected. What I wanted to talk about today was the second half of our top 20 time travel films of all time.
I forgot that we had something to do.
That's all right. I think there's some films in this top 10 that we can skip over because, for instance, the first one, I had no idea it was even a time travel film. Mm. I saw it once in the 80s. I don't even think you'd be able to guess
it. Give us a TOEFOP style clue then.
If a beloved Kiwi comedy duo,
Flight of the Conchords,
decided to change the name of them into
Flight of the Aviator,
someone who could give you directions.
Flight of the Navigator.
Flight of the Navigator. There you go. Do you remember that film?
No, remember the title. So, well, I remember the title as being Flight of the Aviator, but I remember the form of the title.
I'll just read what the journalist has wrote. This family film involves a young boy who goes missing in a Fort Lauderdale ravine, only to show up 8 years having 8 years later having not aged. There are UFOs and rubbery little creatures and whatnot, but there is a real emotional wallop to the moment when the boy realizes that the world has moved on without him, right down to a scene that plays out like a horror movie where the boy realizes his parents have become unrecognizably ancient, even though they're probably only in their 40s, which is how I feel right now. Is that time travel? I mean, that's the most scientifically accurate time travel because he's gone out into outer space and has come back and more time has elapsed. Mm. But I would not class this as a time travel film. I'd say science, like UFO movie, outer space movie.
Mm. I mean, it does involve time travel though. Like on the definition of this list, which is means, you know, is there traveling through time? There is traveling through time.
Okay. Well, this next film, you'll get it. It's on every list. Mm. It's often held up as the most accurate.
Oh, I always forget the name of it. Primer.
Some see Shane Carruth's Primer as the gold standard of what a time travel film should be.
Boring.
It's the sort of movie that seems really unnervingly realistic. unnervingly realistic. What do you boring. Say boring?
Just really boring.
From a down at the heel engineers. Mm. to the unshowy nature of time travel itself, where people, in effect, just get in and out of some boxes. That's right. They walk in and out of shipping containers. Almost entirely unwilling to explain itself. Kind of like that little kid at the playground today. Entirely unwilling to explain himself. For years, Primer fans have come to rely on a series of graphs and charts to figure out what the film actually is. I mean, I think that's a bit misleading. There are charts and stuff online which show you the different timelines, because every time you travel, you obviously start an alternate timeline. So there are multiple versions of these time travelers every time they go back in time. Look, I have not seen Primer in over 10 years. I really enjoyed it. It was one of those films like Homer Simpson watching Twin Peaks. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on, but it's brilliant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's worth one watch. But I rewatched it and was like, yeah, I think the appeal of this movie the first time was that it's very different to anything else that you see on this topic. I'm not sure on the second watch. It wasn't like I was like, oh, yeah, I get this now. I was like, yeah, okay. I get this in boring. That I'm seeing people stepping in and out of shipping containers. And my usual criticism on this topic, which is that most realistic is a dumb idea because there is no such thing as time travel. Therefore, there cannot be a most realistic version of time travel.
I mean, ironically, Flight of the Navigator is probably more realistic.
That's right. He went to space, time passed, Primer. He came back. That makes more sense than Primer.
Time dilation, yeah. Okay, this next film is a kind of romantic comedy. It was directed by Colin Trevorrow, who went on to do the Jurassic Park movies or something. All right, Tofop style clue.
So it's not that one I hated, like the About Time or whatever. That was Richard Curtis, wasn't it?
No, no.
I hated
No, that was
movie.
Richard Curtis. It's an American indie. It stars one of the Duplass brothers. I don't know which one.
Okay.
And a girl. I can't remember.
I'm
going
to say Mark Duplass just because he's the only one whose name I can remember.
Yeah, I think the other one's a director anyway. I don't think he acts. Okay, so it's a three-word title, and it is a humorous spin on what would otherwise be an assuring it's a inverse of a reassuring phrase about before you step on a plane or a roller coaster or something.
Oh, okay. That's not a great clue. Have a good ride. Have a safe trip.
Safe is in there. The word safe or safety.
Safe, is it safety before something before safety? Safety before safety and
no.
Safety.
Well, if safety is guaranteed in most instances,
safety
what would
not
be
guaranteed.
A safety not guaranteed. Sorry, I couldn't think of a clue.
No, that's good.
That was awful.
No,
I apologize.
That's okay.
This time travel film may or may not have any actual time travel in it. Okay, because the premise of this film is this girl, this reporter, sees an ad.
Oh, this is the famous ad based on a real ad, right? Which is about...
Biased on a real ad, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And so there's a bit of, it's kind of ambiguous as to whether or not this dude is actually a time traveler. It's a delicate wonder of a thing. A man places an ad in a magazine, asks for a time travel companion. Must bring your own weapons. I've only done this once before. And the respondents slowly come to realize that all is not quite as it seems. I remember seeing this and being a bit ambivalent about it. Not
that's my memory as well.
I don't remember thinking my top 10.
I remember thinking the premise was great, and then being a little underwhelmed by the movie itself.
Number 8, very famous science fiction film from the 60s.
From the 60s, A Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, correct. Will, if you haven't seen Planet of the Apes,
go and see
the fact that
new movie called 65, starring Adam Driver, which...
The fact that I put it on a list of time travel films is probably a heavy spoiler, and for that I'm sorry, but what a reveal. What seems at first like a silly movie about Charlton Heston being persecuted by some monkeys, well, I don't know, apes and monkeys, they're different, and I'm trying to take great umbrage with that characterization. It quickly becomes something darker and much more sinister. That new Adam Driver movie could have probably achieved something similar if it had not blabbed out its big secret in the trailer.
Well, I think that they have on purpose, you know, done that thing of going, this isn't just, you know, the reveal at the end going to be that it was Earth all along. They're going, it's Earth all along. It's as if Planet of the Apes started at the end of Planet of the Apes, and the apes are dinosaurs, and they haven't evolved.
People would have guessed it now. Like film criticism and like geek culture is so literate now that sometimes I won't listen to the Weekly Planet if they're speculating on a film because they come up with theories and I'm like, oh yeah, that's probably what it is. That's really
good. It's better than what it is. And then when the movie actually happens, you're like, yeah, this isn't as good as what they speculated about on the Weekly Planet.
Okay. Number 7 on the list is a giant comic book movie.
A giant comic book movie.
Probably the biggest comic book movie of all time.
The biggest, so one of the
and
the
entire
Avengers
plot hinged around time travel.
Oh, okay, so so
you got two options.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it the
no,
it's the
one
first
one,
isn't it? Because no, the second one's time travel. The second one's time travel.
Yeah, what is it? What's it called?
Avengers. Mate, it's the- Infinity War. Infinity thing.
No. If we were playing Monopoly and you were thrashing me, I might stand up and yell this.
End game.
End game is a lot. So much that it is effectively a time travel movie bookended by two separate movies. And yes, it takes a lot of liberties with time travel from Tony Stark's I did it invention to the lazy referencing of other time travel movies as a shorthand for what the characters do. I think that's good. Mm-hmm. I'm all for that.
Yep.
Look, we're all bloody pop culture literate. If you want to give me the concept, just give me a simile, another film.
This has always been my nevertheless, it's always been my thing with time travel films. Time travel doesn't exist. You don't need to prove that it exists. You just need to explain to me how the rules of time travel work in this universe and vaguely try to apply them to your actual film.
When they get to the time travel itself, the film nails it. The Battle of New York is the obvious highlight, with Captain America fighting Captain America and the Hulk embarrassed by his unreconstructed former self. But the heart of the film really comes when Tony meets his father as a young man and lets go of the past. Yeah, okay, sure. I'll take that.
But all right, I agree, it was six. A great time travel movie. The only thing was that it ruined the Marvel franchise from then on with this fucking multiverse thing that there's now an absolute fucking mess.
Okay, number six is a hard sci-fi, big budget, you know, mainstream movie, but sort of hard sci-fi by one of your mates.
Christopher Nolan, Interstellar.
Yes. Interstellar is also a lot, but at the core, a simple ethical quandary. Would you try and save the world from missing your children's entire lives? Matthew McConaughey has to touch down on a planet during a space trip. The problem is that every hour he spends there is equal to 7 years on Earth. Is the trip important enough to him miss seeing the wonder of his children grow into adults? Technically, if you want to be fussy about this, Interstellar is a time dilation movie rather than a time travel movie, much like Flight of the Navigator. But it gets a pass largely because McConaughey sells the agony of the moment so beautifully. Now, he's ranked this at top six and talks about this film getting a pass. Don't you think if a film is ranked in the top 10 of all time, you shouldn't be admitting films that get a pass?
I mean, I just think when you're doing time travel, like, you've either got to be completely and utterly anal about what the rules of your time travel list are, or that you've got to allow anything that, you know, that counts as time travel. And I think this counts enough as time travel. I'm happy with that on the list.
100%. I know. I think it's definitely a time travel film. And this is one of those ones like Primer where if you watch any of the kind of making of and stuff, it's like, we got Harvard professor blah, 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 and to explain what a wormhole is and all that kind of shit.
Matthew McConaughey. And then we got him to explain it again. And then they drank some bourbon.
And played the bongos, smoked some weed, played the bongos, and he was in. That's how he signed it. Will, if Interstellar went to great lengths to explain the rules on a scientific basis, this next film is just kind of like, ah, fuck, time travel exists, and let's have some fun with it. It's a comedy.
We did Hot Tub Time Machine last. To the Future. Is it Back to the Future?
No, number five. This is Back to the Future, I'd say, be like an adventure comedy. This is out now.
Okay, comedy.
And one of your favorites. I know you have you're very fond of this film.
Did you say it's a trilogy, so it's not Groundhog Day, which I don't think is a time travel movie anyway. But
we have talked about this film and its star at great length. Okay. One of its stars.
There's two stars.
It's a comedy.
And
a legendary comedian in the first two.
And then in the third one, not a legendary comedian?
Yes. Okay. That's correct.
All right.
The third one came out after quite a large gap between the second film. Third, it was about 20 years.
Okay. Bill and Ted's.
Bill and Ted's. It is one of your favorite movies, isn't it?
I just wasn't thinking of it as being a comedy. Like, you know, I mean, I know it's a comedy, but I think Bill and Ted's always kind of plays more to me than just like, I think of Bill and Ted's a bit the same as I think of Back to the Future, in that I both think they're both kind of a
comedy adventure. Yeah, I'd accept that. Okay. There are times when Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure feels like it was written by a toddler off his face on pop. Okay. Shout out to Ed Solomon, who follows me on Twitter, maybe listens to the podcast. But that's a deliberate ploy, a way to camouflage all the careful rigor that underpins the script. Okay. You just put it out of the fire there. The lead characters are initially reluctant to embark on their time travel adventure until they're visited by versions of themselves from the near future who compel them to do it. A beautiful and hilarious example of predestination in action. Extra points are awarded thanks to the film's total lack of interest in consequences. Swiping Abraham Lincoln and Napoleon from their respective eras has no bearing on world history whatsoever, which is probably quite lucky. Yeah, I never really thought about that. The fact that they pull these people from history and then what happens? Like, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation never happens because Bill and Ted, I mean, that is a dark unintended consequence of pulling Abraham Lincoln out is or that they grab him from the theater though, don't they?
So it's all about to be over.
So he's already freed the slaves.
It's over. Yeah, it's about to be over. I mean, the idea would be that they, if he just disappears in that moment, they just have to find another guy with a beard and shoot him and say the president got shot at the theater. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying the whole Abraham Lincoln thing was an absolute cover-up because he clearly time-traveled, but, you know, I'm just putting it out there, Russell Brand style, just to get some more clicks on our podcast.
Just asking questions.
Just asking questions, man.
All right. Number four on this list is a controversial top five entry, I would argue. More recent time-travel film in the sense it was made in the last 10 years. Okay. Action sci-fi with a hint of kind of the paranormal in it, a weird, it feels very out of place. There's kind of like telekinesis involved. Mm. I know Meso, the Weekly Planet's Meso, hates this film passionately.
Okay, so.
It was quite well received by others.
Modern.
Directed by a director who's gone on to do very big films, including a Star Wars movie.
Modern sci-fi.
And this is entirely centered around the concept of time travel. So it's not like tangentially linked, but the whole premise is about time travel. Involving hitmen?
No, tell me, what is it?
It rhymes with Pooper.
Oh, Looper. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Oh, no, I was overthinking it. I was thinking more modern. Because Looper to me feels like it came out 15 years ago.
2012 it came out, which is, I think, it's ranked very, very high. You know what's amazing too is I can tell you right now, Groundhog Day did not make the top 20 in this journalist
maybe
estimation.
Maybe not a time travel.
And Looper got to number four though. Like, I don't know, Hot Tub Time Machine got to 11 or 12. Okay. The one problem, Will, with time travel movies is that the rules always need to be explained up front to Will. That's the only way he can enjoy movies, apparently.
Oh, I don't think that is the one problem. I think that's the actual thing that the problem is when they don't do that. You've just got to make the rules very clear to understand.
In lesser hands, this can lead to all manner of clunky, stilted exposition. But when Rian Johnson dabbled in the genre with Looper, he gave us a masterclass in Show, Don't Tell. The sequence where poor Paul Dano's character is tortured at two different points in time simultaneously, with the older version following instructions carved into the younger version's arm, is arguably one of the most inventive uses of time travel in the entire history of cinema. All that plus Bruce Willis's last truly great performance. Yeah, I think that could be true about old Bruno. I would argue that Bill and Ted's time travel scene in Excellent Adventure, where they have to free everyone from prison, but they don't know how to do it, and then they're like, well, let's just remember to come back in time and leave keys for us, is a more inventive use of time travel because it doesn't involve any visual effects. Okay, number three. Now, I can tell you now that in this top three, two of these films are like probably I'd say, you know, I'm comfortable with them in the top three. One of them is completely out of left field. It's a fantastic movie. But we'll start with number three. They've given us two films, the original film and its sequel. And I would say, again, time travel is not the central premise of the film. It's more of an action movie with time travel elements. Again, a legendary director.
And it's the first and the second.
Yes. I mean, all of the
Terminator
films
and
the same
Terminator
premise.
2.
Correct.
Judgment Day. Judgment Day.
The lure of the first... The lure of the first two Terminator movies were killer robots running around murdering everyone is cool, but they were very smartly built around a framework of pure time travel. We only see the future in brief flashes, but what's important is the present. It is very, very important that Kyle Reese, a guy from the future, has sex with Sarah Connor, a woman from the present, because only that will save humanity as we know it. It's a hell of a pickup line. But also the device elevates what could be a simple, shunky B-movie into the realm of the classics. Well, yeah. I mean, I think the premise is great. It's the execution, which is fantastic. I did see an interview with James Cameron where he said the original premise of the or the way the character of the Terminator was written is he was meant to be an infiltration unit. Like I think Lance Henriksen was originally meant to play him, because the idea being you drop him into contemporary society and he's indistinguishable from everyone else, unlike a 6'4" Austrian bodybuilder. But then when Arnie came in, he just kind of fell in love with him. That's charisma, right? When you can get a director who seems to be as single-minded as James Cameron to completely rewrite the kind of antagonist of his film.
I only had two things that I was going to do. The Terminator was going to be an infiltration unit, and also the entire thing was going to be underwater. Did I mention I love things that are underwater?
Being underwater. All right. Number two on this list is the controversial entry as far as I'm concerned. It is an out-and-out comedy, a largely unappreciated film when it was released, but has since gathered cult status and has been praised as being very precognizant. Is that the word? It predicted the future much earlier than it happened.
So, it's going to be
out and out comedy. You'd say so, it was a fast slash social satire.
I want to say Idiocracy, but that doesn't make any sense.
Why not?
Is that a time travel movie?
It is Idiocracy, and it is the time travel film. Well, in the same way that it's time dilation, right. He gets frozen for 3,000 years. He wakes up 3,000 years in the future.
I guess,
Idiocracy.
By the rules of this list, that is fine, I guess.
The smartest time travel movies use the device as a mirror, telling us more about the times we live in now than the times the characters visit. Oh, I like that. That's good. Enter Idiocracy, Mike Judge's stinging satire about modern times. An average person is cryogenically frozen and wakes up in the future, shocked to discover that the global IQ has fallen off a cliff in the intervening years. Surrounded by aggressive stupidity, he single-handedly saves the US from famine by suggesting that they use water and not an electrolyte drink, Brondo, to grow crops. We are conservatively 15 years from this happening in real life. Oh, I think we're already there. Like, President Camacho was Trump. Like 100%. Ex-porn star, professional wrestler turned president.
And the fact that it feels like we've learned nothing from that, both the movie and the Trump presidency, that people are going, you know what, maybe it'll taste better the second time around. Let's give him another shot. Yeah, it does imply that 15 years might be a very generous timeline.
It's funny too with Mike Judge movies. Obviously his TV shows are successful. But, you think about Office Space and Idiocracy. He makes these really kind of searing satires that people seem to, you can only love them after the fact. It's I guess because they're not sexy enough in their initial kind of release. There's no big stars or, huge concept. They're kind of, lower budget sort of
Silicon Valley,
comedies.
That's my judge too, isn't it? A little bit more critically, received at the time.
Praised.
And a little bit more of our time.
That's
times.
What I mean, though. TV.
Yeah.
Beavis and Butthead, Silicon Valley. But when he tries to do films, the formula seems to be, ironic we're talking about time travel. It's a time capsule film. He makes the film, buries it, and then in 10 years later we dig it up and we're like, oh, it's amazing. Yeah. What an amazing film. Okay. Number one. Should be easy to guess.
We haven't said Back to the Future yet. Is it Back to the Future?
We haven't said Back to the Future, and there's a reason why. And he actually lumps in Back to the Future 1 and 2. The only conceivable first choice, I'd agree with that. The first two Back to the Future films and the third, which is basically a Western and far less imaginative, have come to define time travel as a genre. They deliver a complex set of hard sci-fi rules about what can and cannot happen during time travel and miraculously manage to do it in a way that kids can understand. Good music, cool clothes, a million catchphrases, and in the case of the second film, an unnervingly prescient prediction of how Donald Trump would turn out. Just perfect. Yeah, of course, when Biff steals the almanac. I think it is arguably the best time travel film of all time. It's interesting with the first and the second one, because the first one, the premise is so simple. Go back in time, make sure your parents fall in love. But then in the second one, it's there's multiple timelines. And if you do this, it affects this. And they literally have a moment where Doc Brown has to wheel out a blackboard. And this is in 1989 when we didn't know anything about multiverses and shit. And he's drawing all this shit up. It's How did they, like, did people read the script and go, oh, yeah, that'll go, that'll float. People will understand that, 1989.
But again, this is rules of the universe because they do that thing of going, there's multiple timelines and, you know, your actions have consequences. But they don't get too bogged down in the primer of it all. Like, the people all still gathered in the same groups and all still look like the same actors playing those people regardless of their life circumstances. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like in a realistic version of that, like half the cast never meet each other. You know, there isn't the comedic way that they can play it out that they do for the sense of the movie. And I'd much rather them in movies like that be loyal to what is going to be best comedically than actually like try to, you know, kill themselves to get the time travel aspect of it right.
Yeah, it's weird that decision in the sequel to have the actors play like their own relatives. Yeah. I never dug it. And it's the one thing I'm like, I don't know. Like, I would have just much preferred you just cast like other actors and just don't make this so laborious and kind of technically, I'm sure it's amazing, but I don't know. It's just taking me out of the moment by making it so goofy.
I agree with that. That's probably my major thing that I don't like about the second one.
Well, that is it until they release another compilation of the best time travel films of all time. That is TOEFOP for this week. Before we go, a few things to plug. We have a website, TOEFOP.com, where you can find all our podcasts. Two Guys, One Cup is back. Aussie Rules, the AFL season has kicked off and Will and I are back doing a show. You can find it all on the Listener app, or if you want to listen to it and you're overseas, you can, using a VPN, access it via the website, TOEFOP.com. We also have a Patreon page. Bonus podcast going up every couple of weeks. Heaps of great bonus content. Archives go way, way, way back. That's at patreon.com/TOEFOP. And Will, what have you got?
Yeah, and all James Fosdyke's original artwork, of course, is both on the website, TOEFOP.com, but also on the Patreon page. There's, you know, Quantum Cops and there's Everyone Relax and a whole bunch of different art there if you want to have a look at James's stuff. And, of course, his Redbubble page. Go specifically to James Fosdyke's Redbubble page if you want merch.
Mr. Foz.
Because when I was out in Adelaide, saw a few people repping some Foz merch in the audience, which was nice to see. So definitely do that.
TOEFOP Foz merch or for other podcasts?
No, it was, look, TOEFOP related. Like, you know, there was definitely some TOEFOPs.
What were
they? There was one guy who had like a giant picture of me, which I don't know if it was a TOEFOP or a, like something else, but it was a little distracting, I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, that would be.
but regardless, thank you to everybody who's doing that. Speaking of shows, if you're in Brunswick Heads, watch out. I might be putting on another What You Talking About, Will, improvised show. Darwin, Canberra, Melbourne International Comedy Festival. So Darwin and Canberra are before that they will be, you know, probably the week that you're hearing this. So I'd love to see you out in Canberra and Darwin for the new show. And then after that, Melbourne International Comedy Festival. It's already about half full. So if you want to come and see my show at the Comedy Festival, get in quick. And then after that, Sydney Comedy Festival, Brisbane Comedy Festival, Perth. I'm coming to Perth. Townsville. And there'll be some other places as well. comedy.com.au is where you can find all that information. And I have a book which is called I Am Not Fine, Thanks. You can buy that signed at the shows if you come along to a show, but otherwise just buy it at a bookshop. And my last year's special, Logical, is available for free on ABC iView.
And you can find us at TOEFOP on Twitter and Instagram. You can also go to YouTube, check out TOEFOP TV. You get highlights from each episode put up there. Plus, we're putting up some brand new shorter YouTube videos that our mate Nick at Listener cuts together for us, and they're awesome. But for now, I'm Charlie Clausen.
Listener.